So I just want to identify three of the things that have been said a number of times, and then I will also say again. The first is that the G20 is not coming here at the end of June. The G20 is already here, and it has been here for a long time. The second is that capitalism is an unjust system, and the only way to achieve justice is to overthrow it. And the third is that this is a part of a long-standing and ongoing struggle. There are a lot of new people that have been mobilized through this G20 organizing, and that is necessary and it is exciting. And I implore everyone to see themselves within that history and to look to the future and to look to how to continue organizing in your communities and continue building a strong fight back. And I'm here to speak specifically around disability and disabled people and how the G20 pertains to those communities in this city. But first I want to talk a little bit about what exactly disability is, because there's a lot of different definitions and understandings of what disability means. So to be clear, disability is not the story of an individual tragedy. Disability is the story of systemic oppression and the exclusion of groups of people who are considered deviant and undesirable. And within the capitalist system, the people that are labeled as disabled are labeled that way because we are understood to be unproductive or underproductive within the economic system as it operates right now. And this is why, when we talk about disability, we have to talk about poverty. And we also have to talk about race and gender when we talk about disability, both because those populations have a marked higher proportion of people who are disabled, and because those groups of people are special targets of capitalism. And those two things are interrelated. They're not independent of each other. But because I'm talking about capitalism, and what I'm saying is crouched in a very strong anti-capitalist argument, I want to be very clear that while I believe that overthrowing capitalism is necessary, I for no minute believe that overthrowing capitalism will lead to the end of racism, patriarchy, sexism, heterosexism, and other oppressions. All of those are intertwined and interrelated, and they work to reinforce each other, and we cannot lose that when we're talking about capitalism. So back to disability. It's an identity imposed upon people for political reasons and as a way of marginalizing people. It is not a biological reality or a scientific definition. It's a political definition. So a couple of quick examples are around mental health stuff. Homosexuality and drapetomania are no longer considered psychiatric diagnoses. Drapetomania was the propensity to run away, diagnosed exclusively to slaves who were fleeing slavery. So those diagnoses are no longer politically useful, so they're no longer pathologies within the medical system. Likewise, a wheelchair user who lives in a world where there are no stairs wouldn't be considered disabled, may even be considered to have an extra advantage because that person would never have to find a chair, unlike most other people. A deaf person who lives in a world where everyone knows sign language also wouldn't be considered disability. So these have contexts that are imposed upon them. And I also want to highlight one of the primary ideologies of capitalism, which is an individualist ideology. And what capitalism strives to do is to isolate people and create individual consumers and alienate people out of their community context. And this is a very, very important colonial tool as well, where colonization, one of the primary aims is to destroy communities and implant a capitalist system. And so any kind of acknowledgement that people are interdependent is actually a threat to capitalism. So there are certain things that capitalism has ingrained in its culture as acceptable forms of interdependence while we don't speak of them this way. And that involves the financial transactions. So for example, no one here, I would venture, grew all of the food that you ate today or sewed all of your clothes or wove the fabric to sew your clothes. We all rely on each other to meet our basic needs. But the myth of capitalism is that we are independent and we can just pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and go to work and support this consumer economy. So disabled people are a particular threat to capitalism, because disabled people, for the most part, work to acknowledge that level of interdependence, the need for mutual aid and mutual support. And when people work to establish communities to actually meet our needs and ensure that disabled people and everyone in that community can thrive, to capitalism, that's a threat to our economy and it's a threat to our entire society. And that's one of the reasons that disabled people are targeted in particular by the G20 and by capitalism as a whole. And so what does this targeting look like? I'm gonna give two really quick examples. The first is around public transit. So when it was announced that there was a funding shortfall, one of, if not the first things that was announced by Jambroni was that the TCC was going to no longer work to meet its accessibility plan. So rather than the subways being fully accessible by 2015, wheelchair accessible by 2015, now it's gonna be 2025. The only reason the city is going to stick to that is because that's the year that it becomes illegal to have inaccessible public transit. So disabled people now are put back by 10 years in accessing public transit. At the same time, they hiked transit fares, and that's another accessibility issue. Many disabled people are poor, many people in our communities are poor, and even if there's a ramp to the subway, if it's $3, is still completely inaccessible. So that's one example of how these cuts or these austerity measures impact people. Another one is the cut to the special diet, and I know that people have spoken to it already. The reason that this keeps coming up is because this is one of the most offensive and violent examples of G20 measures within Ontario recently. This means that we will see mass evictions. This means that we will see an increase of desperation and desolation in our communities. And so fighting against the G20 means fighting against increased transit fares and physically inaccessible transit. And it means fighting to keep the special diet, to raise the rates. It means defending the Novotel workers, and it means fighting together to organize collectively and support each other's struggles. And of course, as has already been said, these kinds of austerity measures are enforced across the board by G8 and G20 countries, and particularly devastate poor people and racialized people in the global south. And so the devastation that we're going to see here as a result of those cuts is going to be magnified in other places in the world, and I don't want to lose that while we're talking about local issues. We are a part of the world, and the consequences that happen here are being echoed and reverberated throughout the world. And as these measures are increased, when governments, for example, spend $1 billion on a summit, with the vast majority of the money going to policing protesters. So that's just one example of where they're choosing to funnel money and whose expense it's being paid at. These protests, as I think, I would rather not go to these protests. I think all of us would rather not have to organize and attend these protests. And if resources were allocated fairly and justly on a global scale, they wouldn't have to take place. But instead, resources are funneled to benefit those with power and benefit the rich continuously at the expense of poor and marginalized people across the planet. And a lot has been said about what could happen with that $1 billion. As Lisa said, it would pay for the special diet for 4 or 5 years. It would, as the program exists now, it would pay actually for every single person on ODSP to get the maximum amount of the special diet, $250 a month for the next 10 years. It would pay for every single homeless or underhoused person in this city, plus everyone on the waiting list to get housing. So 80,000 people to be housed in this city at the average rent, $926 a month for over a year. So we could have solved our housing crisis this month. And our government chose to police people, to criminalize people, and to work to further entrench their power and their wealth. So what do? We organize and we protest. Not only the ridiculous expense of this particular summit, but more importantly, the existence of the G8 and the G20. We protest the fact that the leaders of the 8 and then the 20 richest countries, the people who cause wars, poverty, and devastation across the planet, can come together to discuss how to further concentrate power in their own hands. But let me be clear, as has already been said, that these protests in June will not solve the problem. It's a part of a long history and a continuing struggle to build unity and a strong global justice movement that will one day win. And overthrowing the entrenched systems of oppression will take a long time. As already has been said, it's been a fight of generations, and it may still be. But the more people who get involved and start that fight, the faster it will happen. And each of us needs to see the G20 as an opportunity to organize in our own communities and to see ourselves as a small, necessary piece of the substantial justice movement. We fight the G20 in this spirit. We do not register our dissent. We fight to win. We will fight until we win, and we will win.